Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is the Athletics dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portz, I'm with you on a Thursday afternoon. I think it's a Thursday afternoon. It's been a wild stretch here. Joined by The Athletic and TSN's Pierre LeBrun. Pierre, welcome and thank you so much for being here.
No worries. I was about to ask you what you're doing for July 4th weekend because this feels in my mind and body like July 2nd.
Right.
Yes. But of course, it's July 14th.
So. Yeah, well, there were plenty of fireworks last night in Columbus. How's that for a segue?
Yeah,
thank you. And I must say, Pierre, I really appreciate this because not only are you joining us, which of course is fantastic, you're already settled into the cottage. And there's a lot of people who wouldn't have picked up the phone first day at the cottage. So I appreciate that. We're going to talk about, well, what the hell else are we going to talk about? Johnny Gaudreau signs a free agent contract with the Blue Jackets. Nobody saw this coming. I don't think Gaudreau saw it coming at the start of the day yesterday. I know the Blue Jackets didn't see it coming. 7 years, $68.25 million. And Pierre, let me start with you with this, because I was surprised yesterday, to put it mildly. Just in your years of covering this, you look at things from a national perspective, of course. I'm hyper-focused on Columbus. Where does this rank in the realm of knock-your-socks-off free agent type moves? We typically have some idea where the top players are going to go, and this just seemed to really stupefy and surprise for people here in a very positive way that the Blue Jackets were able to pull this off. Where does this rank for you?
Well, I'll get to that in a moment, but the reason I had to jump on your podcast,
yeah,
is because as this story was developing last night, after about 12 hours of television, I was doing my last show, That's Hockey, with Gino Retta and Dave Poulin, and you joined us in the middle of all this. And so I feel like it's only fair that I repay the favor. But was crazy. In live television and confirming that Johnny Gaudreau was going to Columbus, that was probably not my finest television. I won't go back and look at how I looked as it was playing out. But it ranks up there. 27 years of doing this, I would say probably top three or four for stunning signings. And I do have to give a shout out to Bob McKenzie because, you know, Bob is semi-retired now, as most people know.
Yes.
You know, he does the World Juniors. He does his draft rankings. And then he comes in as per his deal in semi-retirement, and he does trade deadline day and free agent frenzy. So he comes in yesterday morning. I hadn't seen him in months. We had talked, obviously, over the phone, but I haven't seen him in months. And, you know, he's trying to catch up. It's not easy to – it's incredible how talented he is that you know, being semi-retired and still has all his networks.
Right.
And he says to us as he sits down at our insider's desk, it's like 9 a.m., he goes, this is a really weird thing, and you know, who knows – if it's true or not, but I got to tell you, someone told me this morning, keep an eye out on Columbus for Johnny Gaudreau. I swear to God. And, you know, we didn't know really what to think about at the time because we were so focused on the teams that were surrounding Johnny Gaudreau's hometown, you know, Devils, Islanders, Flyers, whatever, like that cluster. And I had not heard Columbus, neither had Chris Johnson or Derek Dreger. And again, Bob was sort of like, well, you know, we don't know who told him this, but that's what he told us. And so we kind of filed that away and we mentioned it a couple of times, but during the day, because again, it felt out of place with what we were hearing all the whole time. And of course we know how the day ends. So it really is surprising to me. You know, I wrote about this in my last piece of the year that, it's funny how people read something and take it a certain way. A couple of Blue Jackets fans read my, you know, my background piece and thought I was discounting the fact that he wanted to go to Columbus. I'm not saying that at all. My point is that my job, especially from a national perspective, is to recreate what the market looked like from everyone involved in the process. And the reality is, and again, this takes nothing away from such a feel-good story to me for the Blue Jackets, and we'll get to that. The market was not that big for Johnny Gaudreau, which is, that's been as shocking as where he ended up. I mean, once he told Calgary he was leaving and therefore told the league he didn't want to play in the West,
right?
He cut off half the league to begin with. Yeah. Because I want to tell you, Seattle Kraken would love to spend more money.
Sure.
But they realize, what's the point? Johnny Goudreau's going east. But then even within that context, there are a bunch of teams in the east that simply can't get on it. I mean, you know, Tampa, Florida, Toronto, all these teams are capped out. So they're not putting an offer down to Johnny Goudreau. So now you come down to the teams that we thought would make offers. Well, the New York Islanders, as I reported, were absolutely interested. Never made an offer, is my understanding, because they didn't have the cap room, right? The Flyers, Chuck Fletcher, didn't even make anyone guess. He said he did not make an offer.
Right.
So as far as I could tell, the only two teams, you know, I'm sure other teams kick tires because teams are curious, right? But the teams that made legitimate offers was a 7-year offer from the Devils, a 7-year offer from Columbus, and that was basically it.
Yeah.
And it paints a picture of what it's like right now in a flat cap world, that no matter how talented you are, when a lot of teams just don't have room, and then other rebuilding teams don't feel it's time to go that route, and then you tell the league that you're geographically limited, well, that this is what happens. And within that context, I actually think his agent, Lewis Gross, got him a pretty good deal in Columbus.
Yeah. It does. Doesn't this all change? Like, for me, where it started to become real with Columbus, and Columbus did a press conference yesterday, Jarmo Kekalainen spoke after the signing of Eric Branson. There's no way he holds a press conference at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
If he knows that he's got Johnny Gaudreau on the hook. It was news to them when they got done with the Gudbranson press conference and went back upstairs. Oh my God, he's willing to listen here. He's seriously willing to listen. We're not just being used to drive up the ticket somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It opens up, does it not? And I think there was some surprise. Were you surprised as well that Philadelphia wasn't willing to move pieces around to make this happen? That's a team they hired Tortorella in part because they needed to reinvigorate the fan base and bring a little passion back to the organization, which has kind of fallen on hard times. This is a very Philly move. That's the kind of thing that they do. I was surprised that they wouldn't be willing to acquire Gaudreau and then make it happen or make some moves to make Gaudreau fit under their cap. How big of a surprise was that to you?
Yeah, I think we were all surprised. I think what we have to be careful now in ascertaining, because no one with the Flyers is responding to this directly, is that was there an unwillingness to move money to make space for Johnny Goudreau or an inability?
Huh.
Two different things.
Sure.
And I think it came down to, I actually think they would have made him an offer if they could have, for example, be able to move JVR's deal.
Hmm.
You know, but you saw with the shocking Vegas Carolina trade yesterday. Just
here, take Pacioretty. Yeah.
That moving money is at an all-time high in terms of cost. I mean, it cap space is gold.
Yeah.
And so I just don't think that it's that easy. That's why I give the Flyers a bit of a break here. It's hard to move money. And every time you move money, you're losing assets to do it. I think that explains the Philly part for me, even though that doesn't come directly from them, but that's my read on it. And I think there's no question that Lou Lamoriello would have been in on this. But again, and I heard from some teams this week that said, you know, Lou was trying to move a player or two. And again, we just saw what the price is to move money. It's difficult. So, you know, I wrote this today and it sounds a bit smarter after the fact than I wish I would have thought of it live on air yesterday. But, you know, Evgeny Malkin is darn lucky in many ways that he came to his senses and calmed down and took the emotion out of it.
Yes. Right.
Because I will tell you right now, from checking with teams around the league, I couldn't find, there are lots of teams who wanted to talk to him. I don't think there's a single team that would have given him a 4-year deal. I'm telling you right now.
Right, right.
So listen, it's okay. Johnny Goudreau made the decision to lead 8.5 times in Calgary, and I respect him. When you're a UFA, you have the right to do what you want, and he's at peace with that. But it cost him money, pure and simple, because the market, no matter how good you are a player, I mean, as we tape this, Nazem Kadri still hasn't signed. Crazy. There isn't that much free money out there among the teams that intend to contend. It's just the reality right now. And it's going to be like that till we get past 25, right? Until you know, we're the salary cap finally starts to grow again.
Crazy. The Blue Jackets have to do something now, because once they get Line A signed, and the plan, again, to reiterate, the plan is to keep Patrick Line A and Johnny Gaudreau. There's no, it's not Gaudreau or Line A. Jarmo Kekalainen thinks they can keep both.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. But they got to do something. At first, they needed to do something to clear up space for lineup space for some of the younger players. Now they got to figure out how to get under the cap, which is not a, this is, Columbus has been up against the cap. They've never been this far over the cap. So this is sort of a new territory for them. You were just talking about how difficult it is to move money. How big of a challenge is it for them now to trade a player, a Gus Nyquist, an Oliver Bjorkstrand? It's going to be someone that hurts a little bit, because they've got to get, by my guess, about $6 million, maybe more, off the cap. How tough is that going to be for them, the follow-up move here?
Well, I would say this. I mean, it's not easy. It will be difficult, but it's doable if you're Columbus for two reasons. One, I think you just mentioned some decent players.
Yeah.
And you know better than me who might move. It's not like those are deals that people won't want, but it might mitigate, unfortunately, the return. And that might be the frustrating part, is that, you know, you may have to get everyone ready in your market for the fact that, you know, when you're trying to move money and everyone knows it, it kind of hurts your leverage. Having said all that, there's a team that comes to mind. I'm not saying this from any sourcing or having made phone calls on this, because I haven't on this particular angle, but there's a team where Johnny Gaudreau just left that actually has a lot of cap room in Calgary and doesn't want to be, you know, at this point, you know, just came off winning a division and wants to try and stay competitive. I don't know. We'll see what happens with Matthew Tkachuk. But I guess my point is, and on top of that, Brad Treliving and Jarmo Kekalainen, actually, I know from going to GM meetings, they're get along well,
sure,
relationship. So, you know, maybe that's an example of where you go to a team and try to see if there's something that could work. But again, I want to make sure I'm not starting something here. That's nothing that's been told to me, but you asked me an example of what it could be like. I think that's an example there.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Now, you've been to Columbus many times. You've had a blast here. I know I've been in your presence when you've had that good time. There's a perception about Columbus, fair or not. I hope this is the point of the podcast where Jarmo Kekalainen tunes out. There is a perception, a reputation. We can debate all day if it's fair or not. I don't think it is. Some others may. That this is a place that star players don't want to be. When given a choice, they have gone elsewhere. We have examples of this. We don't have to look far. I've been saying for the last 24 hours now, there's nothing that can change that perception more effectively, quicker than a decision like Johnny Gaudreau made yesterday. How does this resonate around the hockey world long-term, Pierre LeBrun, with Gaudreau choosing to play here? Does this change the foundation of how Columbus is perceived? Does it start in that direction? Are there more things we need to learn before we can say that? What are the aftershocks of his decision on Wednesday?
I think it's going to be monumental. I mean, I think that was the lead of your piece last night, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And I think it's real. And I think players, you know, players are young men, and you know, you could say what you want about whether or not perceptions are true or not, but they're still perceptions.
That's right.
And so I, you know, players pay attention. And you know, when Pierre-Luc Dubois forces a trade and Seth Jones doesn't want to sign and Josh Anderson doesn't want to sign, my point is, it's not just Panarin and Bobrovsky, which took all the oxygen in the headlines. There are other players too, and players pay attention. I think in one fell swoop, Johnny Gaudreau's decision cures a lot of that in my mind. And, you know, and you're right. I've loved my trips to Columbus over the years. I think it might be one of the most underrated NHL markets in the league. I think the league is lucky to have it as a market. And frankly, you know, as a journalist, you're obviously neutral, but I was generally happy for Jarmo Kekalainen and management in Columbus that this happened yesterday, because they finally got a bounce.
Yeah.
And they deserve it. They run a good ship. They draft well, develop well. Everything is set up for the players in Columbus. I mean, it's just, and you know, it's funny. I thought that for the Jackets, that upsetting the 62-win Lightning in 2019 would be a step in getting into that perception. But of course, the exodus happened after that. So, I do think that this will change a lot in terms of how players view Columbus as an option in my mind.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And what do you think of the Blue Jackets now on ice? I think there's still some question marks, especially on the defensive side. This team should score a boatload of goals. Can they defend? Is Elvis Merzlikins up to the number one job as a goaltender? Really his first taste of that last year, and it was kind of a mixed bag. What do you think about this team competitively now on the ice? 20 points out of the playoffs last year, I think better than a lot of people expected them to be when they were expected to be a lottery pick, and they worked their way out of that, 12th worst, I think. What should people expect now? It's an interesting group, these Blue Jackets.
Well, it's about as fast and as skilled as I can remember them. Yeah. And you can correct me, but that's the first thing that comes to mind. But you mentioned Elvis. To me, it starts there. Like if I'm going to start sitting down and saying, okay, let's look at the standings. And you're right. I think they surprised a lot of people last year. I want to see more consistency from him. But two things I would say about that. One is that I've never in all my years, I don't know how you feel, I've had a tougher time analyzing goaltending than I do today. And I think it's been reflected in the goalie carousel and some of the moves that teams are making. But my point is that the game is so fast now. I think goalies are kind of paying the price. And in particular, I don't think Columbus was as tight defensively last season as we're used to seeing them.
Correct.
You know, they had a decent season. So, and part of that, I guess, is you know, they've got a different coach and they're changing their style. But I guess what I'm saying is it really, for me, you know, offense won't be an issue. But I do think that consistency in net, and that's so cliche, I get it. But to be honest, it's you need it.
Yeah. Or otherwise, it's kind of huge. Yeah,
you're chasing so many games throughout the year if you don't get it. But, you know, this is a better team, you know, than they were when the season ended already.
Yeah.
Lots of reason for optimism.
What were some of the other fascinating stories around the NHL? Yeah, these last couple of days for you. Ottawa, of course, grabbed headlines. That was kind of cool to see. Jersey did some things. Detroit did some things. What really sort of struck a chord with you, Pierre?
Yeah, I mean, the Red Wings, low-key, under the radar, Steve Yzerman, you know, sneaky Steve Yzerman, you know, made a bunch of moves. But, you know, none of them are contracts that I think will come back to haunt him, right? They're sort of medium moves that help sort of bolster a young core. So I really liked his day. I thought Don Waddell in Carolina had a phenomenal day. I mean, trading for Brent Burns and making him a $5.2 million player instead of an $8 million player, and then getting Max Pacioretty for free, basically upgraded Tony DeAngelo into Brent Burns and got Pacioretty for free, replacing Ivo Niederreiter. Now, they're going to miss Vincent Trocheck. I think that it's not just what he brought on the ice, but he was kind of a glue guy there. But 7 years, and the Hurricanes knew months ago that their camp was looking for real long term, and good for him, he got it. I don't think the Hurricanes thought he would, but it also means that Jesperi Kotkaniemi gets a bigger role now for Carolina. But just overall, I think that what was interesting to me is yesterday was supposed to be about free agents, and the Hurricanes made two blockbusters trades. So they went a whole other route, and I thought it was excellent work. You mentioned the Senators. I mean, it's interesting. You can draw some parallels, I think, between the Blue Jackets and Senators for different reasons. But the parallel being perception, how the fan base has felt about things, and you know, the idea that, you know, do players want to play there, all those things, right? And for Claude Giroux to essentially say, you know, because he had other offers, believe me,
yeah,
say, I think this team's turning a corner, I'm going to play here. That was a pretty big deal for that franchise.
Yeah.
And of course, they've made other moves. But yeah, that's sort of, you know, sort of where I look at it. You know, there's still other moves coming, of course, which
of course.
But and the Golden Carousel overall fascinates me, and I have no idea what's right or wrong. It just puzzles me. I mean, the Leafs, where I live in Toronto, they're either completely brilliant rolling the dice for Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov, or it will cost them their job.
Correct.
I mean, I don't know if there's an in between. Like, it's sort of like, this is it. We're doing what no one thought we should be doing. But then again, at the end of the year, maybe these two guys bounce back. I don't know. It's and we've seen a lot of that. I mean, the Stanley Cup champions say goodbye to their Stanley Cup winning goalie Darcy Kemper, and then you know, put their eggs in Alexander Georgiev. So
right,
I just think the whole goalie thing has never been more. I don't want to say out of whack, but I think there's a lot of different lines of thinking on what people are looking for in goaltending than before, in my opinion. It's interesting.
Yeah, and one team that's sort of gone back and forth with their goalies in recent years is another team that I think was a fascinating team during these last couple of weeks, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was the question, are they going to keep the band together or are they going to keep Rickard Rakell? And they did it both, which I find fascinating. The term for Letang is fascinating. The term and the money for Malkin, fascinating. I wonder what you make of that team in a couple of years. Their centermen are damn good centermen, future Hall of Famers, but they're 34, 35, and 37. And what is Letang, 35?
I don't have it in front of me.
Somewhere around there. This is a team that's up there. Are you surprised that they kept all of this together? I know it's got to be hard. Columbus really doesn't have any experience with those kind of legacy players. How to recognize that it's the end when it's the end. But are you surprised that they kept it together for another go round here, a couple go rounds?
So I think this was an impossible situation. And actually, would have been interesting to find out what would happen if ownership had not changed. You know, Ron Hextall was hired by the previous regime. And I know Mary Lemieux still part of it, but generally speaking, the majority stakeholders have changed. Ron Hextall was hired by the previous ownership more or less to come in and make some pretty tough decisions. Those were his marching orders. Now, part of it is at the time when he got hired and Jim Rutherford stepped down, the team was kind of meandering. And what's interesting is that the team has been probably more competitive. They just keep hanging on and pushing the window open, right. Not to a great length. I mean, they lost again in the first round, but I mean, they're a playoff team. And, you know, I think there would have been easier decisions for Ron Hextall the last couple of years had the team kind of fallen apart. Right. And then you have the justification to say, well, you know, right. you sit down with Sid and you say, you know, it's time to, and we're going to have to break up the band, but they've just been good enough where you can't really justify it. Here's the thing. And this is why I said this is an impossible position. I actually think they were going to regret at least one of those two contracts, either Letang or Malkin, because of the longevity and their age and everything else. I mean, Malkin's fourth year is, you know, he's got a full no move through the end of the age.
It's incredible.
So, you know, he's been injured a lot. But the alternative was, and you could feel the emotion in the market Monday when Malkin, you know, indicated to the team that he was going to market briefly. The market was really upset. Now, again, you can't run your team based on what your fans want all the time, because then you'll end up being, what's the expression? You'll end up sitting with them in the stands.
You end up sitting next to them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But my point is, if you part ways with Malkin, let's say, because you realize, you know what, I'm going to regret this deal in 2 years, who are you replacing him with? everyone thought Vincent Trocheck was going to be the automatic replacement, you know, because of his roots. He just got 7 years in New York. Is he getting 7 years in Pittsburgh? Is that any better than 4 years for a legacy player in Evgeny Malkin? So my point is, it's they may regret it at the end of these deals, and we may all look back and say, oh, maybe the tougher decision should have been made there in that summer of 22. But if they had parted ways with Letang and Malkin and really drew the line, because their original offers for each guy, Aaron, was a two-year extension of Letang, two-year extension of Malkin, both players
were incredible.
Set. But yeah. Let's say they had drawn the line and actually stuck to that, or at least to 3 years. And they're gone. You've lost Letang. You lost Malkin. Everyone's upset. You know, legacy players. You can't really compete next year. And, you know, probably the captain's not thrilled. And so the short term doesn't look very, very good, but it might look better in the long term. So it's a long way of saying everyone wants to have a clear position on this. It's almost an impossible position to have where you're 100%
right. It's incredible. It really is a fascinating story, just how and the Red Wings faced this 10 years earlier, did they not?
Right. Exactly.
I mean,
what are you going to tell Nick Lidstrom before he's gone that we're not competing anymore?
Yeah. Look, you know, go peddle your papers, Nick Lidstrom. We're done here.
And Washington's living it too, to be honest.
Like, yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Under the extent of Ovechkin and Backstrom, there was no going back. Right. I mean, you're not rebuilding after you extend those two guys. And again, I get it. Alex Ovechkin built that rink. So you have no choice. But I think it's, in my opinion, I think the Caps and Penguins from here on in are going to be good teams. They're going to continue to be good teams.
Yeah.
I just don't see them winning cups.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to, because they've staked their claims now. And you understand why they did. These are their guys. These are the people who have delivered it to them in the past. It's really hard to turn your back on that, I would think. And no matter what stage of their career they're in. And there's also something really nice, and it's rare in today's games, that someone is just a career, someone was a Penguin, right? Yeah. Used to seem to have that a lot back in the day, where guys would spend their entire career with a team. If you got that chance, it's a pretty cool thing to be. That's why Pittsburgh has such a legacy with its fan base and its that sweater. And they've had some great players there, generational players now for 40 years. Pierre, thanks so much for your time. It's been a great chat, as I knew it would be. Really appreciate it. I suspect we'll see you in Columbus next season.
Oh, I think I will have reason. And the way the airline industry is going, I think I'll make the drive from Toronto.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. But, not a bad idea.
But honestly, and I mean this, I'm really happy for Blue Jackets fans and for the fan base, which is loyal. They packed the rink every year, and you know, they had something great happen yesterday.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thanks for your time. We'll see you soon. Have a wonderful summer, and thanks for your time today.
Right on.
Thanks, Pierre. And thanks to Danielle, our great producer. I think we got a couple more shows in us before we take a break for the summertime. Blue Jackets still got some moves to make, so we'll be communicating with y'all. And thanks for listening. As always, appreciate it, and we'll talk to you all very soon. Take care.